Greetings, my friend, and welcome to Beyond Curious. Conversations with brave adventurers like yourself that are taking voyages into the unknown to satisfy their curiosity, fulfill their purpose, and bring their ideas to life. My name is Brandon Fong, and I'm so excited to have you here. Whether you are a brand new friend listening to my voice for the very first time, or you are a seasoned listener coming back, I appreciate you so much. And I'm so excited to introduce you to today's guest, Donnie Bovine.
A few months in, I had to cash in my 401k to make sure I could sustain the farm and our lifestyle and the likes. And then right at the six-month mark, I literally walk out the back door of my farm, hit our driveway, and my wife's Jeep is missing. Now, she's asleep upstairs, and I'm like, what the hell happened to the Jeep? So I call the police, and I said, hey, I think somebody stole our Jeep. And this very caring and loving, sweet person on the other end of the phone goes, no, sir, that thing was repossessed.
Entrepreneurs are insane. It never ceases to amaze me to hear the stories that entrepreneurs tell in the process of bringing their ideas to life. So anyways, you are in for one treat for today. So let me tell you a little bit about Donnie before I tell you what to look forward to in today's episode. Donnie serves as the CEO of Success Champion Networking and is the founder of the Badass Business Summit. And he is a top podcaster and five-time best-selling author. Motivated by a desire to transform the landscape of networking, Donnie established business-to-business networking groups across North America. Now with hundreds of members, they have created a business that is more than a community. It is a support system. SCN is a B2B business family that recognizes networking as a vital driver of growth and success. They are dedicated to providing their members with the essential support, a thriving community, and valuable education to ensure their B2B success. Donnie is an awesome dude, and shout out to our mutual friend, Laura DeFranco, for making this introduction. You are actually going to hear Laura on the show as well if you haven't heard her already. But anyways, there is so much juice in this episode, and as always, I would love for you to look out for three specific things. Number one, why Donnie, as an ex-Marine, stared at himself in the bathroom mirror and said, I love you, to himself, and why I actually decided to do the same, and why I would encourage you to do the same as well. Number two, you're going to hear that full story of how Donnie lost his Jeep and had to ask his wife to cash in her 401k to save their farm, recover the Jeep, and how he actually made it from that to the global network that he is building with these B2B networking summits and how he's transforming the world of networking. And then number three, look out for the Steve Jobs task evaluation technique that Donnie used to step into his role as a CEO instead of somebody that just created a job for himself. So anyways, this was a fun, energetic conversation with Donnie. There's a ton to learn. So without any further ado, here is my new friend, Donnie Bovine. Mr. Donnie Bovine, welcome to the show, my friend. Beyond excited to have you here. This is going to be a blast.
Oh, absolutely, dude. You know, just a few times you and I have hung out, man. I'm just fascinated with a young guy who's getting after it, the guests you've had, the caliber of your show. So I'm looking forward to it, man. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, brother. Yeah, no, this is going to be a good one. It's been a ton of fun diving into you and your journey and kind of the mistakes that you've made along the way. And I thought a good place to start would actually be 15 days before you started your company. So you had a life-changing dinner with a business partner, and they mentioned something that was kind of a wake-up call for you. Would love for you to share that.
Yeah, so, you know, I turned 40 before I even knew that you could be an entrepreneur, right? And as I turned 40, I'd heard guys like Gary Vee and Tim Ferriss and all the people talking about being an entrepreneur. And so I was starting down this path of maybe there's something more to life. Well, during this fateful dinner, I went out with my then business partner. And at that dinner, we were talking about doing the buyout. It's going to be a 5-year, you know, buyout, multi 7-figure deal. And I was going to take over his business. And that was going to kind of me sail off into the sunset. And during that dinner, he said something that forever changed my life. And what he said to me was, you know, Donnie, thank God you're my retirement plan. And now everybody always looks at me, he's like, he said what? And he said it out of love. I want to defend that, right? You know, he was really thanking me for the business I'd help him grow and the amount of revenue I've come in. You know, it was just a poor choice of words at the time. And after that dinner, I went out and sat in my truck, and I'm looking myself in the rearview mirror going, dude, what the fuck are you doing? You were literally somebody else's retirement plan. And I looked over my entire life and realized that my entire journey had been somebody else's retirement plan. And that was the final catalyst where I said, fuck it, I'm out. And 15 days later from that moment, I launched my company, Success Champions.
15 days. That's a pretty quick turnaround. And as we all know, your entrepreneurial journey has been sunshine and rainbows, right? So like that, ever since those 15 days, everything's been a roller coaster ride of unicorn glitter and all that other stuff.
Absolutely. It's been freaking perfect. Amazing. I highly recommend it for everybody.
Well, so I first of all, I love your story. The fact that you started entrepreneurship when you were 40, right? And like some people are like, I heard it somebody say a while ago. It's like, you know, when you're too young, your excuse is one day when I'm older, when I have more experience, I'll be able to launch a company. But then what happens when you get older? It's like, oh man, I don't have the youth that I used to have when I was younger. Right. So the answer is the best time to start is now, whenever you do it. So I love that you didn't like really let that kind of jump into anything, but I think, let's go a little bit more into some more of your kind of entrepreneurial experiences of that first year, because I think it's so easy to look at somebody that's done the stuff that you've done or the other guests that have been on the show or anywhere else. And it's like, man, like they've always kind of crushed it right out of the gate and things were super easy. And so I would love to maybe share a little bit. I know you have like a story about like a Jeep moment six minutes into it. So maybe talk a little bit about some of those early days of the company.
For sure. Well, and on the farm, our running joke is when it gets cooler out, we'll actually do that project. And then it gets cooler, it's like, yeah, you know, when it gets a little bit warmer, then we'll do that project, right? So it's the same thing. It just moves throughout life. But the day I opened my company, I was slapped with a non-compete that I don't remember signing. So I had full intent of launching a sales training company. That was my previous career. And I started off finding out that now I couldn't talk about sales, business development, sales training, sales management, you know, so the business I was going to open was now not an option to me. So I called myself a success coach when I first started. And Brandon, to this day, I have no damn clue what the hell a success coach is. I promise you it's some sort of business whore that just says yes to anything to make a buck, because I was so desperate. You know, 'cause I mean, at that point, my wife and I were living the supposed, you know, American dream life. You know, we had built our dream farm, second house on the property for my mother-in-law. So by certain standards, we were doing really, really, really well. And now I'd launched a business with the whole mindset of launching this sales training company, and I had zero revenue coming in, right? So I'm going from a very lucrative career to zero, and now I don't know what the business is. So I'm just hustling to try and figure out, how do I bring in revenue? What can I do? A few months in, I had to cash in my 401k to make sure I could sustain the farm and our lifestyle and the likes. And then right at the 6-month mark, I literally walk out the back door of my farm, hit our driveway, and my wife's Jeep is missing. Now, she's asleep upstairs. And I'm like, what the hell happened to the Jeep? So I call the police and I said, hey, I think somebody stole our Jeep. And this very caring and loving, sweet person on the other end of the phone goes, no, sir, that thing was repossessed. I mean, it was just like the most cold-hearted, you know, thing that happened. And I was blown away. I knew that we were behind on payments and I knew into like, but I didn't realize it was that bad. And as I'm walking in the house, I'm starting to deflate, and then it hits me. Now I got to tell my wife the rest of the story, which our mortgage was also 3 months behind. And so I'd cashed in my 401k. There's no other revenue, no other money coming in. And I tell my wife, and I to this day, I remember the first words out of her mouth were, the house? She was upset over the Jeep, but now I'm telling her we're going to lose a farm too. And, you know, it'd be healthy for your audience to know that her dad had passed away about 6 months prior to. And so he had only spent 6 months on the farm when we moved out here. And his one thing was, Donnie, take care of my family. You know, so I had to take care of his wife because in her house. And if we lost my house, she lost hers. So luckily, Elizabeth was gracious enough that she went on a Monday and she cashed in her 401k, which was our last freaking lifeline, and, you know, decided to get her Jeep back and save the farm. Which really is the most wild thing about that moment is that moment completely sucked. And I'm happy to dive into that further. But right around that same damn time frame, one of my top clients had reached out to me and offered me the vice president of sales job for their company, which was a Rockefeller company, $350,000 base salary, and with a commission structure that would pop me back to almost seven figures. So now my wife is just cashing her 401k. We almost lost a farm. Her Jeep got repossessed. We got it back. And I still don't have a lot of revenue, hardly any revenue coming in from the business. Now I'm sitting on a job opportunity. My wife and I had to sit down and go, okay, what do we do here? And if I had taken the job, I'd have gone back to road warrioring and traveling. I'd been all over the U.S. And I really didn't want to go back to that lifestyle. And my wife looked at me. She goes, I'm not going to lose you to another career. Let's do this. And we bet on the company. And that's how we got in the game. And let me tell you, having my Jiminy Cricket, which is my wife, in my corner, I would not be here without her, period.
That's so special. I love that. There are a few things I want to zoom in on that story. It's funny because, like, you know, you hear the saying, we bet the farm.
We literally bet it.
Literally bet the farm. Like, literally bet the farm.
Unintentionally,
Yeah. And it's funny because it's like, I've heard this as a commonality between other stories of guests that have come on the show. And I found this to be true in my life as well. It's like, you find that next level jump that you want to make and you commit to it. And the universe always finds a way to provide you with opportunities. It's like, are you sure you want that? Like,
right.
Are you sure you really want that? Because here's this shiny new opportunity. So let's if you can, as best as you can, let's zoom back into that moment. Like, you get that call, you get that opportunity for someone to literally, it's like, I can make the boo-boo go away. Like, here's 350 grand and you decided to do it. At the same time, you decided to, you look at your business and you know, clearly whatever you've been doing has not been working, right? And you make the decision to move forward. So, like, I would love for you to maybe just unpack a little bit about, like, from that moment on, how did you actually mentally handle the fact that you just turned that away? And how did you begin to kind of shift things as you move forward into some of the stuff that you're doing today?
Well, I mean, if I were completely honest, I felt like an absolute moron turning down that job, right?
So it didn't feel good.
No. I mean, in all actuality, I should have taken the job. Even if my morals kicked my ass in that moment, right? Because I could have even taken the job for a few months just to buy us time. But I just knew I could not do that to a company. One, I had friends that were running and operating and the likes, and I could not do that and look myself in the mirror, if you will. So I felt dumb turning down the job, but I also knew that ethically I couldn't take the opportunity. So my wife, you know, God love her, has said some amazing things in my time. And after we made the decision to not take the job, work on the business, her exact words to me were, get off your ass and go fucking sell something. She's like, I don't care what it is. I don't care what you do. Go sell. So I could not sell sales training. So I started selling motivational training. And luckily I had several companies bring me in for a motivational training for their people. And a buddy of mine had an event coming up, and it was about a 400 person audience event. And he reached out to me and said, hey, will you just come tell your story on stage? Now, my previous employer had reached out to me a couple times and was like, hey, cease and desist. You can't talk about that, right? You're under a non-compete. We think you're trying to do sales training, you know? So I looked at my friend. I said, dude, I can't necessarily come on your stage and I can't teach sales, right? They're coming after me hard with their attorneys and the likes. I said, he goes, cool, just come on and tell your story. I had never done public speaking at that point. I'd done a lot of training, and training and public speaking are two different games, right? So I go up there and I don't know how to public speak at all. And so I get up on stage and I start just telling my story. And afterwards, I didn't know, once you're a public speaker, that you should, when you get off stage, you should like make yourself available for people to come up and talk to you and interact. I was just tired and exhausted. So as I walk off stage, I went to the back and just sat in a damn chair because I was just mentally whooped doing this. And so this guy, you see him come through the curtains and he's looking all through and he finally spots me. He's like, oh, hey, I need you on my podcast. And I'm like, what the hell is a podcast? So this is April of 2018. And he's like, dude, you'll love it. It's like news talk radio. I have an in-person studio. You can come out, sit down, we'll talk. I just want to share your story. I'm like, oh, that could be fun. Let's do that. So my first kind of breakthrough was being able to get on that stage. And then I was on that podcast, and being on that podcast was an absolute blast. Then the podcast aired and like a couple days later, and one of the listeners became a new motivational client for me. And that's what started really the turn of my company working towards becoming a business.
I love that. I'm sure we could talk so much about like lessons learned through podcasting and conversation,
sure. but
I think, so there's another interesting thing I'd love to kind of dial in on, because I think one of the things that I observed in just listening to a few other podcasts that you've been on and the way that you operate, it's like the people that I resonate most with in this world that we're in are people that really almost view entrepreneurship as part of their evolution, part of their spiritual journey, right? Because it's like, you have to look at your shit. You have to like self-discover and kind of like come against all the things that are your demons, you're both mentally and physically and all that kind of stuff. And so it sounds like from a big part of your journey, it's like this journey of entrepreneurship forced you to look at things, forced you to evolve, forced you to figure out who you were in the entire process. So I would love for you to maybe share a little bit is like, as you were in these early days, as you've continued to grow, how that level of self-discovery has kind of intertwined with your entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah. Well, so I don't think there's a greater tool on the planet to meet the dude in the mirror than building a business.
Yeah.
You know, literally as you're working for other people, excuses are the easiest damn thing in the world. Like if you're a sales guy working for other people, literally you're like, okay, my sales are down. Well, marketing sucks right now. Or the economy sucks. Or there's more competition. They're all legitimate excuses. They're still excuses, but you get away with that stuff as a sales guy. When you own a business, you don't get that luxury anymore, right? If your sales suck, go freaking sell more. If your marketing sucks, we'll go figure out bigger marketing. If the economy sucks, pivot, right? You better do something, you know, because there's nobody else that's going to be able to answer for all this stuff. So the most fascinating thing for me is the day I had to tell my wife that we were about to lose everything was mentally one of the most amazing days ever, because it was the darkest I've ever been. Now, I've never been a guy suicidal or anything like that, but I was not living up to my standards as a husband, not living up to my standards as a man, not living up to my standards as a, you know, an entrepreneur, business owner. And I don't really consider myself an entrepreneur. I'm really more of a business owner. I think entrepreneurs are those crazy guys that are just really good at going building multiple things over and over and over and over again. And like Elon Musk and maybe a Gary Vee, Tony Robbins, those guys are entrepreneurs. I'm a business owner that's still on the grow, right? And, you know, and I think it's really important for people to make that distinguishment. But that day that I had to tell my wife that we lost it, or almost we're going to lose everything, I found myself that night looking in the mirror. And while looking in the mirror, man, I was disgusted with the person that was looking back at me, because I just wasn't living up to my standards. But looking in that mirror was probably the most profound thing I could have done, because it became a reflection of all the things that I needed to work on. So I remember distinctly saying the words in a mirror, "I love you." And that just felt weird as hell. Like it just didn't feel like something I could say. So I changed the words up to the words, "I'm proud of you." And instantly my mind said, "No, you're not. You're not proud of this thing. You're not proud of the things you're doing." That became a very pivotal moment for me, because as I looked in the mirror and said, "I'm proud of you," and I realized I wasn't, now I started getting ideas of things I need to start working on. And that's what really sent me down the path of self-discovery, because every time I went to the mirror, something else would pop up, and that became the next thing I had to go work on. Mm. So building a business will get you to a place where you run out of your own excuses. And when you get to that moment where you can take ownership of everything, and you get to that moment where you have something that highlights what you need to work on next, it's a powerful dynamic and a powerful equation to meet the dude in the mirror.
So powerful. And I think anybody can go and do that exact exercise that you talked about. And it's funny too, because it's like, I know you were a Marine you were a Marine and you served for years, right? Which thank
Four
you
years,
for
yeah.
your service. Yeah, but it's, but it's you know, typically when you say Marine and saying "I love you" to the mirror, like two words that you wouldn't really hear, right? You know, so it is a cool exercise, and I'm gonna just commit out loud, like I'll go try this today, right? Because it's like what shows up. Like I'm just curious to see what shows up when you look at yourself in the mirror and you say that. And I think that if you actually sat and journaled on that, or you turn this into a practice of if you don't believe the words that came out of your mouth when you say "I'm proud of you" or "I love you," it's just a very simple way to look at the mirror of the inside of your mind, right? Like, cause you're looking at a physical mirror and you're staring at yourself. But like, if you just kind of sit and observe, how does your body feel? How does emotionally what's being triggered or what's preventing you from actually loving yourself? Because we all know that we can do way better in our worlds. If we actually do love ourselves, we can show up better in our relationships. And so I love that tool. I think that's a great thing that anyone can try if they're looking at making the unconscious conscious, which is one of my favorite quotes.
Yeah. You know, and I want to make sure people understand this isn't about going to the mirror and judging yourself, right? This is about going to the mirror and listening for what's popping up. So
yeah.
Anytime I said I was proud of myself, instantly it would be, no, you're not. You're not doing this thing. It wasn't from a place of judgment. It was from a place of awareness. So like the first time that I did it is, you're not doing the things that a CEO, a business owner needs to do. So I had to figure, okay, what do I need to do from here? I had to go sell. Okay. So that became the first thing I had to go do. So each time you go to the mirror, when you say those words, now start listening for the things you need to either go fix or work on, not from a place of judgment, from a place of, this is how I move forward. This is how I become proud of myself in this moment.
Mm. I love that, because you just bridged me to something that I wanted to ask about as well, because we can kind of like tie how this process of self-discovery can translate into like a physical correction that you can make inside of your business or the way that you operating. And some of the keywords that I heard you just say is that you weren't operating like a CEO. And I heard you 100%. Share somewhere else where you kind of had this moment where you realized that you were operating from an employee mindset when really you needed to have a CEO mindset. And so I kind of lumping together a big question, but I think you'll know where I want you to go with this is like, you had done some exercise about Steve Jobs and how he showed up. So I would love for you to share that insight, because I think that's really powerful.
So, yeah, I went and said, I reached out to a friend of mine who was a very successful guy. And I said, hey, I'm trying to figure out how to build this business. Can I buy you lunch and ask you a few questions? And he was like, sure. So we go out to lunch, and you know, I've learned in those situations, let them come to you versus you going to them. So I was small talking, trying to just get a conversation. And he finally looks at me and goes, all right, let's get down to brass tacks. Tell me about your fucking company. And so I start walking him through the company, and I'm freaking 2 minutes into telling him about my company, and he starts laughing hysterically. Now, he's a good friend of mine, right? And I said, dude, I'm pouring my soul out about my business. Why are you laughing? And he goes, Donnie, you dumbass. You have built a shitty job for yourself, not a company. Now, granted, I don't want anybody thinking that this guy was busting my chops. This was completely out of love, right? We have that cool relationship that guys sometimes get that way, right? And I said, what do you mean? I said, you know, he goes, dude, you're doing everything in your business the way you would have done as if you're working for somebody else, not as a CEO of your company. And as soon as he said that, my mind went, if there could be like a visual, imagine like E equals MC squared and all these numbers and shit going out of my brain, because I'm all up in my head going, holy shit, he's right. And I got so in my head in the moment, I actually forgot that I was in a conversation with him, and he started smiling. He goes, this lunch is on me. And he paid the bill and left as I sat there for a second, and I got up, and I'm just so in my head. I end up walking to my car and driving home. And as I'm driving home, the thought keeps going through my head is, what does a CEO do? What does a CEO think about? You know, what is the job of a CEO? And I didn't have a damn answer. Like, you know, because I was always the sales guy. As a sales guy, you go sell. I never had the inner workings of a business. I thought a CEO was a dude who kind of sat in the corner and, you know, showed up and spoke every once in a while, right? I didn't know what their damn job was. But it sent me down this path to going, what's the difference between how a CEO thinks and how an employee thinks? And the most profound thing that I finally came to understand is an employee always thinks about, how do I get this done? Because, you know, as an employee in most companies, you don't tell anybody you're struggling. You don't tell anybody that, you know, you need help, because that leads to disciplinary actions or the like. You just put your head down. They say, tackle that mountain. You go tackle the freaking mountain. As a CEO, it's not about tackling the mountain, because the CEO never thinks about, how do I do it? They think about, who can do this for me? And it was such a mental shift, because my entire life, somebody had always told me what to do. And now I had to be in a position where I had to figure out how to do myself and tell myself what to do. And that was such a hard mental shift. And I think one of the biggest mental struggles in the world is going from employee to CEO, because you literally have to reshift everything you think about. But once I started thinking in who, a cool transformation came through and I started building a business, because now I was starting to find, okay, who can do this for me? Who's got that skill set that can level this up in a moment? And that really started pushing me towards becoming a business owner and ultimately a CEO.
I love that. Yeah. And anyone, I would highly recommend the book Who Not How by my buddy Benjamin Hardy, if you want to kind of dive into some of that, that ways of you can think about that who, not how. But I love that. I think, if would you mind sharing very concretely what that day, because I heard you share this on another podcast. I'm like, oh, I want to, I think this is a good thing to talk about. Is like you did an exercise where you asked yourself if Steve Jobs would you mind sharing that?
Yeah, for sure. So when I got home, I sat down and I said, and thanks for reminding me, I said, you know, how do I figure these things out? So I started writing down everything I did in the business, down to like taking out the trash, right? Now, and I just was jotting down. And so I just put those all in one column. Then I drew this big line down the right side of that. And to the column to the right, I wrote this phrase: would Steve Jobs do this activity? And, right. So now I'm going through, would Steve Jobs take out the trash? Fuck no. Right. You know, in any activity that Steve Jobs would not do. Now, I was comparing myself to a guy who'd built a billion-dollar corporation, you know, everything else. Here I was, a solopreneur trying to figure it out. But it shifted my mentality so much. And so what I looked at is every job on that list that Steve Jobs would not do, that became the things I'm like, okay, I got to outsource this. I got to find somebody else who can do this, right? I've got to bring somebody else in. So it's a profound exercise for anybody listening to this to go, now, granted, I wasn't making hardly any money at this point, so it's not like I could go in and hire somebody to do each one of these tasks. So I had to lump those into groups, and so I broke them down to groups like, this is sales activity, this is marketing, this is operational, this is accounting, right? You know, and started putting these in collective groups, and I'm like, okay, how do I outsource this group? And by the way, if you're a solopreneur trying to figure all this shit out, you're not outsourcing sales yet. Get off of it, go sell, outsource everything else. You're going to sell, get over it, right? It's just part of the business. But it was such a healthy exercise to get me to see, you know, specifically how I was looking at the business versus how I needed to be looking at the business and how I push it forward. Because, you know, Steve Jobs, he ain't going to do 90% of the shit I had on that list. So
yeah,
it was pretty profound.
No, I love that exercise, and it really kind of opens up two different paths that I think would be interesting to explore. One is like how to effectively outsource. And now you talk about, you have like an ADD outsourcing kind of framework that would help people. But like another thing that I think is important is like, as you think about the role of the CEO or the visionary, the one thing that can never be delegated ever is the vision for the company, right? Like obviously sales, but like the ship needs to know where it's going, right? And so you talked earlier about that first year of being a business whore, right? Like, yeah, I'll do that thing. Yeah, I'll do that thing. But like, eventually that's not sustainable. And you have to figure out what you stand for, what it is that you're creating. And I believe that when you find that alignment of that vision and you start to be able to articulate that vision and you can kind of enroll people in that vision, not only does life become easier. In fact, that's even how you and I ended up in a conversation, because our mutual friend, Laura DeFranco, you know, I talked to her and I'm like, I'm looking at getting connected to people that are building community, which maybe we could talk about that later. And now I'm getting messy and planting like four seeds, but I'm like, I want to talk to people that are building community and leadership through their content. Right. And like, now you and I are having a conversation and that kind of stuff. But like, it was because of that clarity of being able to articulate the kind of people I was looking at meeting that, you know, people show up in your life differently. So I know I just opened like three things, so I'm just going to choose. Would you mind maybe sharing a little bit about how you went from that phase of not really knowing, being a business whore, doing all this other kind of stuff, to actually uncovering that in yourself that you wanted to create in the world, and how you've been able to kind of articulate that vision as you built the community that you built?
So it's been a series of vision experiments, if you will. So one of the things that I found as I was building the company is there was so many people in the marketplace that were preaching entrepreneurship as sunshine and rainbows. Like, you know, you had all these gurus coming out of the woodwork. So like, oh, I've been seven figures, you know, overnight, or, you know, sell this course, sell this book, sell these things, right? And I'm like, that's not the truth behind business, right? Business is not that simple, not that easy. So I put it in my head that I was going to start sharing all my fuck ups, right? I was going to do it from a standpoint of, I wanted to find others who could give me advice on how to do this. So I started sharing my fuck ups, and all of a sudden people on social media, people started asking me questions about my fuck ups, but they were asking it from like a place of advice. They were asking me for advice. And I'm like, no, I'm screwing this up and I'm asking for advice. I'm not trying to give you advice here. But what I found is because there was so many people from putting a positive spin on it, that nobody was out there really talking about, I don't want to say the negative side of business, but the real side of building a business. And so I made it a point that I was going to share my entire journey and every screw up and fuck up and alike, because somebody needed to be that voice out there going, dude, this shit's hard. And so my first vision for the company was to help as many people as possible find freedom through building a business. And the way I was going to accomplish that was by sharing all my screw ups. So that started me down my path. Okay, this is a solid vision. But for the vision really hit home for me and how powerful it is was actually about 2.5 years into running the company. And to set the scene a little bit, at this point, I had a 7-figure podcast company. I had a six-figure podcast company, a 6-figure sales training company, and we were doing our first Badass Business Summit. And we were just a few weeks away from having 17 speakers flying in from around the world. I'd rented out a convention center, and we were all diverging, you know, on this convention center for the Badass Business Summit, and COVID hits. And so now we can't do this whole conference. And I'd paid the deposit down. The conference centers tell me they won't give me the deposit back because that's how they're going to meet payroll, which I understood because they had no revenue coming in. So I was empathetic to it. So we postponed our conference and the like. But I'm sitting there feeling like we were going to be okay as a business, but I'm looking around at the world, and it took me 2.5 years to feel like I built a legitimate online business. Just so people want a timeline, that's real, right? You're not going to build an online business overnight. It was 2.5 years. And I knew people didn't have 2.5 years at this point to be able to move their business online. They had 30 days if they were lucky. And due to some background and things that I had, we decided that we were going to launch Success Champion Networking at that point, right? So this was March of 20. And in launching that, I realized we couldn't do the same old type of networking, that I had to have some sort of vision that people could lean on and latch into. And I started talking to people that I'm going to launch these networking groups. And I don't remember who asked me, but somebody asked me, they're like, what makes your networking just, you know, different from everybody else? And I said, I promise one thing, I'm going to change how the world networks. And they sat forward in their chair instantly. And I realized, ooh, that's something there. And so my vision became, I'm going to change how the world networks. And every time I said it, man, people started leaning in. And then it got to the point where I'm like, okay, now I'm going to change how the B2B network world works and how the business to business folks work. And what I found is your vision is right when other people lean in and go, ooh, and it's totally dialed in when they say, man, I want to be a part of that. So that's where I really learned the power of having a real vision is when people want to be a part of it and help you build it. So I know that was a long story to get there, but I hope that's the arc that you were looking for.
No, 100%. Because I think there's several things that I pulled from that. One is the key word that, I mean, you said it kind of two different spots, but the fact that the vision took 2 years to figure out, right? Like, yeah. I think lots of people will say, I don't want to say lots of people, maybe that's kind of an overcharacterization, but like, you know, there's so many exercises to do your visioning, right? Like go ask yourself these questions and you're going to figure it out. But it's like, it's a process, right? Yes. Like, and I'm not saying I have things figured out now too, because it's, but like I've kind of arrived and done the work. It's like, I believe my purpose is to create a more deeply connected world. I have Beyond Curious and I'm working on catalyzing curiosity. And I'm watching a mastermind called Curiosity Island. And I've started to see, as I've kind of like nailed the messaging for the people that I'm serving, the Beyond Curious people that are passionate about deep connection, that like, they're starting to raise their hands in a way that I haven't seen before. Right. And so it's like, it's kind of like, and I've gone through different iterations of the business before, but this is like the highest like level of like, okay, this is the next level, big jump, the next level iteration of what my heart, my soul is really calling for. And it's just, I'm just saying this to kind of recap the fact that if you're listening to this right now, do you feel like you're not clear on a vision? Like it's from my perspective, and it sounds like Donnie's perspective as well, it's not something that just you figure out one exercise, you know, it's like, it's, and then the fact that it popped out of your mouth, like, I'm going to change how the world networks. That was probably like a series of like small insights that you had to actually even get you to the point where you could say that out loud. And that came out of your mouth. So super, super powerful.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I love that you're articulating that, because I get frustrated with all these business coaches and gurus and whatnot. They're like, hey, in 1 hour, we're going to sit down and we're going to do your vision, you know, workshop, and we're going to build your company vision, or we're going to sit down and create your core values in this one. It doesn't happen that way. Right. Like our core values, we call them Champions Code, because I hate the name core values, and having a Knights Code just sounds way cooler than having, you know, anything else. So, but our Champions Codes, they took us about 6 months to totally build them out after we had the vision. And those came about because we constantly found areas in the business we needed, you know, ditches, if you will, is what we always refer to them as. That's a whole other thing. But the same thought process here is your vision is something that is going to evolve. And I'll go back to, you know, you got it right when somebody leans in and says, ooh, I want to be a part of that. Then they're like, I want to help build that. That's when you got the vision right.
Love that. Yeah. And it's one of those things where it's like, I forgot the story. It's like, there's a guy that was like slamming a boulder with a hammer over and over and over again. And then finally, like, the boulder cracks. Like, what was it that made the boulder crack? Was it the final hit, or was it the 3,000 swings?
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, that was beforehand, you know? And it's like, I feel like every once in a while, I feel like part of the way that the myth is perpetuated, like, sometimes there is one exercise that is that final crack, right? That is like, oh, it happened, but it, like, you don't come to that realization if it weren't for all the work that you did ahead of time. Cause it's like, as I think about how I uncovered my core values too, it's like, there was one exercise where it cracked for me and it's like, oh, I got it. But it was like years of self-discovery to come to those core values to begin with. Right. So I think that that's super important to take that long-term perspective. And I appreciate you sharing that. Donnie, this has been super cool on this side of the conversation about visioning and about your story. And I know there's a whole other side to you and your content, as you had this whole series of your life where you were focused on sales conversations. And as I've listened to you share about this content a little bit, like, there is such a need for, I feel like people are talking about this, I'm just going to use the word without a better term, like, authentic sales, like people that are like having legit conversations that don't make someone feel like a sleazeball on either side of it, that really help and support people. And so I think a big part of what I'm focused on right now in my work on curiosity is learning about how to ask more effective questions, right? To myself, to other people. How do questions work? What are the best types of questions? Like, and one of the things I've just kind of observed that I would love you to maybe share a little bit about is like the importance of effective question asking in a sales process, but not being overly prescriptive. Like, I'm going to ask this question to get them to talk about this and get this pain point and get them to talk about this, but like legit intentional questions that allow you to connect with people and see if you can help and support with them. So I know it's kind of a lot, but I would love for you to maybe share a little bit about your perspective on how you leverage questions in your process of enrolling people into a vision or a passion or whatever it is that you're kind of talking to them about.
Yeah. So first, I want to talk a little bit about the word authentic. Isn't it sad in this day and age that we have to say authentic?
Yeah.
but the reason we have to is guys like me, my generation, maybe your generation, you know, we grew up in a world where you had to put the corporate face on. Like, you know, you were one person at work, but God, don't let them figure out who you are in your home life or you won't have a job. Yeah, you know, and so for me, I grew up in a space of, I didn't think anybody would ever do business with a dude who cussed, wore ball cap, t-shirts, and blue jeans. You know, it was the slacks, the button downs, the clean talking and the like. And so the word authentic came around because people were trying to find, how do you just be your damn self?
Yeah.
And so I've taken this into my entire sales career, but it's even evolved more since I've started my own company. And here's the thing, is you can't separate work life and home life as an individual, right? They have to merge and be the same person. And the reason being is, in a sales prospecting world, if you're constantly pretending to be somebody you're not, the real you is going to come out at some point, and you're going to lose trust with your client. You're going to lose trust with your prospects. So you have to be yourself. I think there's real power. And the greatest skill anybody in sales can have is the ability to ask the right questions. And when I say that, people are always like, oh, well, give me the questions. Well, I can't. Right. Right. I can't give you your great questions, because all the great questions come from amazing conversations with prospects, with clients. You know, I'm a firm believer that the answer for most people to figuring out sales is 100 sales calls with somebody who can say yes or no to you. Like legitimate sales calls, because what most people never do is get enough repetitions in of having a real conversation to understand what their sales process is. Like, how do I get to that conversation? Then they don't get to a point of where their sales conversation has a flow, right? They never get to a place where they're asked enough times questions they don't have answers for, right? To be able to learn the real questions they need to ask. So there's a pure art and an absolute craft to learning how to ask the questions around what you sell. And the way to do that is you find yourself consistently in situations where people either are asking the same question over and over again of you, so you can learn how to respond, or you're getting asked questions that you have no idea the answers to, and you got to go find that information out. This is why I get frustrated with companies that do so much product training with their salespeople and don't spend time putting them with actual clients, allowing them to have conversations around things. They send them in the back of the warehouse and say, hey, go learn this stuff, when the real magic happens in real conversations. So for anybody listening to this, if you're listening to my rambling on about, you know, finding questions, the trick is you need to go out and simply create a list of 10, 20 questions that you want to ask on your next sales call. And like, just make this generic list. And it's not about trying to get through that list. It's about trying to fit those questions in so you can open up a real dialogue with people and see where they lean in. What question can you ask that opens up a further conversation? And it's going to get to this place where your sales call becomes such a genuine and real conversation, because it's a dialogue back and forth of you being genuinely curious about their world and them leaning in, and you're asking questions that opens up a further dialogue when other people would be talking to them. So I know that was kind of a broad answer around the thing, but it really comes down to getting into real conversations, human to human, adult to adult, and be able to put all the cards on the table back and forth.
Yeah. No, I love the fact that you don't prescribe questions, right? Because I think people are always looking like, tell me the questions, you know, but like, it's going to come from inside you, what's authentic and what you find yourself saying over and over again. And, you know, this is something that I'm, you know, learning a lot more of myself, is just as I study questions, how important it is to kind of study just how you're naturally approaching things and people's reaction, and you're kind of doing it micro adjustments every single time you have these calls. So I love that it's a process. So I want to kind of add on to this topic with like a related topic, and then I'm sure they'll kind of merge together. But like, in observing you and the way that you talk about sales, you have like allowing authentic and connected questions to actually build relationships with people. But another huge component of what I've heard is like empowering people with choice, right? I think like the problem that when we typically think, oh, sleazeball sales, it's like, oh, they have a series of questions and they're going to force me to kind of come up with an answer. When in reality, you don't want clients that, or any opportunity, whether it's a JV or whatever it is, you don't want to have to start a relationship where they feel like they've been manipulated into something. Like, it's just like, from a lifetime value perspective of a customer, like, it's just, there's so much wrong that happens downstream when you're forcing people into it. So I know you talk a lot about empowering people to make a choice and empowering them to say no, and how to kind of get to that point. So I'd love for you to maybe share some of your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, thanks, dude. Thanks for the softball, by the way. So the whole idea for me about sales is the opposite of what most people have been taught their entire life. You know, people have been taught close, 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 qualify, 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 qualify. And I'm the complete opposite of that. And so I'll try and package that for you. I believe in every sales conversation, you should spend a majority of your time trying to disqualify that individual from being a perfect client from you. And the reason I want people to disqualify is a couple of things happen. One, it puts you on a more relaxed, calm conversation mode. You're not trying to convince them to buy. You're not trying to persuade them to buy. You're going in and deciding, do you want to work with them as an individual? And it's such a power position when you're trying to decide, is this person a good fit for me? And this is very, very hard to do if you're desperate for business, your revenue's way down, and your pipeline's empty, right? This is a mindset that you've got to get to. And the best way to get to this mindset is to have the world's largest pipeline of things that are legitimately have a chance of closing and doing business. But
and also being aligned with who you are and your vision and your business and, absolutely. What, and believing what you serve too, which we were talking about earlier. But yeah, sorry.
Absolutely. No, you're good. You're good. You're spot on, right? So you got to go into these conversations knowing fundamentally what would make somebody the perfect client for you. And some of those things like are, you know, they'll pay their bills on time, you know, they'll do what needs to be done. They're going to lead in, they're fun to work with, you know, they'll make decisions. They'll, you know, honor what they committed to. And my favorite one is, you know, are they somebody I want to have a freaking cocktail with? Right. Because what most people who are out there teaching sales are teaching a transactional sale, or they come from a transactional sales background. So, and I'm not knocking on anybody, but if you go look at most people who teach sales and you look at their background, they're used cars, they're insurance, they're realtors, they're life insurance, you know, it's a one and done type sale. When you're looking at the B2B game, and this is a lifetime value. This is, you're not selling for this moment. You're selling for the next, hopefully 3 to 10, 20 years. So you're selling to that relationship. So you want to make sure that this person that you're going to crawl in bed with for the next 2, 3, 5, 10 years is somebody you want to work with. So you got to think through those dynamics. Do they match the profile of that perfect person I want to work with? Then you should spend that entire conversation disqualifying them against what that perfect client would be. So I'm a big advocate of making assumptions and then go see if that assumptions, you know, works or not. So Brandon, I'll just play along with me a second. If somebody's been a year in business, like they run their company for a year, and I'm asking, what are some of the assumptions we can make about that individual 1 year in a business?
I mean, even just leveraging our earlier part of the conversation, is they're probably not clear on their vision or their direction to the extent that somebody that would do that later is the first thing.
Absolutely, right? We could also make the assumption that maybe they're not financially strong yet, right? Maybe they're still trying to figure this all out. All right, if somebody's 6, 7 years in a business, what kind of assumptions can we make?
Much stronger in their position financially and in their vision, the opposite of what you just said.
right, 100%. So now if we start making assumptions by the person we're talking to, now we can go in and have a different level of disqualification conversation, because now I have this assumption based on where they're at on their journey, whether they're in a company as a purchasing person or they're, you know, running the business from a CEO president perspective. You know, I can go make these assumptions of where they might line up to use my product and service. Now I need to go ask questions specifically to see if my assumptions are right. And then I can try and disqualify them. So let's say they're 6 years in a business. Maybe I sell commercial real estate or something along those lines. Now I get to go in and go, okay, right? Do they legitimately have the means to secure a building, right? Do, you know, and I get to go in from a perspective of questioning, going, are my assumptions right? And then I just go through and I start checking the box. Okay, they got this, they got this, they got this. And by the time I get to the end of the sales conversation, I know if there's a legit opportunity here or not. And the real power comes from that moment when you understand that they're either a fit for you or they're not a fit for you. And then owning that moment and having the ability to look at somebody and say, either where we're at, based on the knowledge I have, let me tell you, your company is not ready for our services, you'd be best served working with another company. You do the Miracle on 34th Street, you know, move, and you pass them to another vendor, right? That can help them out more. Or you legitimately say, man, based off of what you said, I think we can really help you. But in that moment of you being able to say, I can really help you, because look, I hate these assholes that are like, I can help anybody, right? We can, it's so not true, right? And I don't, if that's you, you're a transactional salesperson and that's why your business is struggling, right? Because you're just not disqualifying people enough, man. But the power of telling somebody you can legitimately, honestly help them or not, and be able to walk away from a deal when it's not a fit, makes you such a power player in the industry, because there's nobody that's used to being sold to that has had somebody look at them and say, you know what, you're not a good fit for our company. They'll have so much more respect for you in that moment that you can say that than somebody who's constantly like, dude, let me tell you, can we get a better price for you? Can we, you know, get a tighter deadline? And you start trying to convince them that you're the right person. Take it away. Try and disqualify them. And if you disqualify them the right way, they will qualify themselves if they're a good fit.
Mm, love that. So one zoom in on that part of the conversation. And I want to be mindful of our time too. But like, let's say we got there. They are a good fit. Like, at the end of the day, you... one of the things I learned from, I think this is a quote that I saw from you. It's like, you want a sales conversation is like a conversation with an outcome or something like that. I might've butchered it, but it's like, at the end of the day, even if they are the right fit person and you feel like they're perfect, like, you want to make sure that you're concluding that conversation with either a clear yes, a clear no, or a tangible next step. Right. So like, how do you empower people to actually, cause like, in my mind, you still, even if you could close them, you don't want them to say yes if it is actually a no. Right. So it's like, how do you actually set that up? Because I feel like people are constantly going to just punt the ball down the road or kick the rock down the street. My wife always makes fun of me for screwing up analogies. So if I messed up one of those, but it's like, people, it's way easier for people to say, you know what, like, maybe I'll think about it and like down the road. So like, how do you actually set that up to make sure that people are giving a definitive answer and then everybody can get sleep better at night?
Yeah, 100%. So it's really simple. My only closing move is to literally ask, what should we do from here? And I love that phrase, because now they're going to paint a picture for you. If the conversation's gone well, they're going to say, you know what, I love every bit of this. What would it look like to work together? Right now we can go and start down that path. And oftentimes they're like, man, this is great information. It's not what I'm looking for. And we can go, cool, call it a no. Where it gets dicey is when somebody says what you just said, right? They're like, you know, let me go think about this. Let's look at this to fourth quarter. You know, let's kick this down the road or punt it down the field. So I'm gonna fuck up your pun for you just as well. Right. Right. So in that moment, the weak-minded salesperson goes, okay, cool, we'll talk to you in fourth quarter, or cool, I'll call you in a couple weeks. And what people don't know is that the reason some of the best salespeople in the world win is because they have the ability in that moment to go, you know what? I know you said call you in the fourth quarter. I know you said call you in a couple weeks. Let's do this. How about we call it a no? That way we've got closure and I don't worry about coming across as a greaseball salesperson. If something changes at a later date and time, you can reach out to me and we can start that conversation over again. Two things will happen. Thing one, if it's a legit no, they're going to go, thank you, let's do that, right? Because they wanted to tell you no, they just didn't want to hurt your feelings, right? Mm-hmm. They were trying to be a nice person. If it's not a no, they will instantly say, hold on. I'm not saying no here to this. Then you can say, okay, then what are we talking about? What do we do? Is there something that you need more information on? And they're going to tell you. And the reason they're going to tell you is because you're so brutally honest in a moment to say, here's your out, right? We can get to closure, because without closure, things just drag on forever and forever and just continue on, right? You got to get to that yes, no, or solid next step. So you get a yes, you get a no. If you get a next step, immediately go for the no and watch what happens. And if it's a legit no, take it. Don't try and convince and sell them and overcome objections. And it's a whole nother conversation, but the only reason you get objections is because you fucked up somewhere way earlier in the sales call.
Yeah, no, love that. And I'm definitely going to leverage that. Cause it's like, man, like think about, I'd much rather get a clear decision and know whether or not it makes sense to continue pursuing. Right. But like, if you can literally just empower them to say, no, it's not a good fit. Like it's just going to save everyone time, energy and effort. Right. And so getting to that point, I think is really brilliant and a master move. So man, Donnie, this has been such an incredible conversation. We've gone all over the place and learned so much about your journey. So I'm just being mindful of our time. I have one quick question about curiosity that I love asking guests, and then we can kind of wrap up about where people can find out about your journey and kind of wrap up for today. But I would love for you to know, Donnie, like how has curiosity impacted your life? Like what are some of the ways that curiosity has shown up for you and the way that you operate in the world?
You know, interesting is I would, prior to launching my business, I would have told you I was extremely curious and everything else. Post running my business, I can tell you I wasn't curious for the first 40 years of my life. The reason being is I thought I was doing the self-help things, the self-talk, the self-love, all that while I was working for other people. But it took really hitting rock bottom in building a business to one, get curious about myself, who I am, what makes me tick, what drives me, and what are the emotions I have and those likes. And by the way, just to define something for anybody, if anybody ever says, you know, you've got to know yourself and you've always struggled with what the fuck does that mean? How do I know myself? It's simply this. You need to discover why you feel the way you do in the moment you have those feelings. That's how you discover who you are and what makes you tick. Because there's a reason you react and emotions pop up. So it first showed up for me when I really started to get into a place of getting curious about who I am, like who is the dude in the mirror? The next kind of twist to that is I had Tony Watley on my podcast, Growth Mode, and he hit me with like the lyrics from the country song that said, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. And what I realized is I was not curious about my own beliefs. Like, what are my soapboxes that I'd be willing to defend or could defend because my beliefs were so strong about it? And so that's the continued curiosity road that I'm on right now, is understanding what do I actually stand for? What are the beliefs that I actually have that I could put out there into the world to one, draw my people to me, the people that are into the way I say things, how I say things, how I show up, and also repel the people that are never going to be a fit for my world and the things I do. So that's where I'm curious right now and continue to explore. Just kind of give me an example of where I'm at with this. One of the things that I realized is in the B2B networking world or networking in general, we've all been taught you should have a business pitch and you should, you know how to introduce your company in a certain way. And I put out a post on LinkedIn about a couple months back and it just blew up. And it's because I said, look, quit with the fucking pitches already. This isn't Shark Tank, right? You don't need a 30-second pitch. You don't need an elevator pitch. And that really started forming an idea around what are the beliefs I had, because I picked a fight. Like some people were instantly like, oh, glad somebody finally said that. And then a couple of people jumped on and like, dude, I teach how to do pitches, right? You have to have a pitch. And one thing I knew instantly is they're broke as a business, because if your entire business is teaching people how to do pitches, you might want to rethink the business. But you know, it comes down to you got to find those things that you can actually stand on and truly put out in the marketplace, defend those beliefs, and be open from outside input that may make you to change those beliefs because of another influence, and be willing to do that. So that's where curious I am now.
I love that. I don't want to add anything to besides the fact that, yes, I truly believe you need to stand for something, but to hold your beliefs in pencil, not pen, right? Because it's like, if you're just bullish, if you're adamant about never being able to change, like that level of inflexibility is just, in my mind, a little bit unhealthy, right? So it's like, it's a weird line, because you got to know what you stand for. But at the same time, you can't be so inflexible that you're not willing to be able to look inside and come to another level of insight. So man, I love that. Well, Donnie, where can people find out about more about the magic that you're up to and the stuff that's going on in your world, my friend?
Well, before we get there, guys, let's do me a favor. If you've listened this far and you've hung out with us, do Brandon a favor. go take a screenshot wherever you're listening to this, wherever you're watching this, and share this out with one person. Tag me in it, tag Brandon in it. If I see it, I will come give love on it. I'll come comment and interact. But look, I have my own podcast growth mode, and it's a lot of work building an audience and a crowd and a following. So if you're getting value out of whether it's this episode or any other episode, share it out to other people. And it's literally like giving Brandon a virtual hug, and it'll mean the world to him. If you want to find me, LinkedIn's my playground. That's where I spend most of my time. Like, come connect. Tell me you heard me on Brandon's Beyond Curious show. Send me a DM. I'm happy to DM back. Like literally right now, my LinkedIn profile, if you want time on my schedule that for free, you can just click on my profile and there's a scheduling link literally on my LinkedIn profile. If you want to have a conversation with me, you know, check out the podcast growth mode, wherever you listen to podcasts. I bring people on from all walks of life. They coach me live on how to grow and scale my business. So it's been a blast to put that together. But the most important thing is, man, show Brandon some love, freaking tell other people about his show. He's doing some really cool things. This guy does more thorough research about his guests than almost any other host out there. And I could think a lot of podcasters should take some lessons out of your damn notebook. But so show him some love and tell other people about this episode or any other episode of his you've loved.
Thanks, brother. Really appreciate that. So go find Donnie on LinkedIn and check out some of the other stuff that he's got going on and all the other stuff he just mentioned. And it's funny, Donnie, because usually I wrap up the show by like asking someone to do that, but you kind of did my job. So I guess I'm going to have to modify. I'll have to modify what I did. So thank you for sharing that. But I'm just going to really quickly say, to add on top of what Donnie said, it's like, if you're still listening right now, that means not only did you click on the episode, but you're still in this episode, like an hour into it. That means something in here has kept your attention about Donnie's story or the way he shows up, or maybe there's something that's immediately applicable about learning how to ask more effective questions or be curious or empowering people with choice. Or maybe it was that story from the very beginning of Donnie literally hitting rock bottom and having to tell his wife, yo, we need your 401k after your Jeep was just repossessed. And how do we go from here, and turning down a job that showed up right after that? Like, maybe there's somebody in that situation right now that's a friend of yours, that's a neighbor, that like maybe they made a big leap, but now they're having this opportunity on the table. And obviously it worked out well for Donnie to stick to his guns and make the impact that he's made. So you never know what could change someone's life. That's the cool part about the podcast. It's like, you don't know what that one thing is that's really going to make a big difference. But if you choose to share that, it would, as Donnie said, it would make my day. It would make Donnie's day. And I just appreciate you so much for being here. And Donnie, any final things you want to say before we head off for today?
Yeah, go be the champion of your success. Nobody else is going to do this for you. We named our company Success Champions based on the fact that, you know, back in the old days, two kings would come together and say, you pick your best, I'll pick my best, and whoever wins, winner takes all. And in that moment, I thought, God, how cool is that these kings would pick their champion? And in that same moment, I had to thought, when do we become our own champion? When do we choose to stand out front for ourselves? That's how I named the company Success Champions, which has evolved into Success Champions Networking. But go be the champion of your own success and watch what happens to your world. Thanks again, Brandon.
Love that. Mic drop. Appreciate you, brother. And we'll talk to you soon.